Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is Roger Eric Tinch, art and online director for the CineVegas Film Festival. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me on again, Josh.
Always a pleasure to have you here.
It is, yes.
So let's start with, I guess, the first big movie of the summer. We're already, it's, you know, May 1st, and now that's the beginning of the summer now. So
at least that's what the commercials say.
That's what the, well, I mean, in Vegas, you know, yeah. It's like 80 degrees, so yeah, I suppose we can count it as the beginning of the summer. So, which is X-Men Origins Wolverine, the sort of awkwardly titled prequel film to the X-Men series with Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, who played the character in the three X-Men movies. And as the title implies, we get his origin of sorts. I guess it really depends on what you think of as an origin, because in terms of how did he get his superpowers, there really isn't much to tell. He's a mutant. He's born with them. And we see him at the beginning of the movie as a kid, kind of. I don't know if it's really supposed to be discovering it for the first time using it for the first time.
But that's not even really, to me, that wasn't illustrated very well either. You really don't know what's happening. And for me, at least, the origin part of the story was told through I thought it was a pretty amazing credit sequence where it jumps through the different eras of war.
Right, right.
That, to me, could have been the whole film if they stretched it out. But instead they gave
us... Or if they hadn't, and then we could have left before the movie got worse.
Yeah, but like, I mean, for me, the first like 15, 20 minutes of the movie really moved. I really was really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And then it just hit this brick wall and became very laborious, I guess, as far as the story.
Like, yeah, it did. I mean, those first... I liked the first 15 minutes or so. I felt like the opening sequence with him as a kid where he discovers his powers was a little awkward. And it has that shot that they love, the overhead shot of Wolverine where he's got his arms outstretched and he's looking up at the camera and he's like, ah!
Yes.
And I thought they used that like many
way
times.
Way too many times, yeah.
But you're right about the credit sequence. It's very cool. It shows Hugh Jackman and Liev Schreiber plays Sabretooth, who is Wolverine's brother. In this film, although he's not Wolverine's brother in the comic books. I think that's something they just kind of made up for this movie, and they go through various, because they're not really immortal, but they live a really long
time. And see, that's the thing too, is like coming back to the whole origin thing, that like you're just kind of thrown into it, and you just kind of know as much as you've ever known about Wolverine in the movies.
Right.
You don't gain any extra knowledge.
No, you really don't.
And as confusing as the movie started, I was expecting some answers. But like I said, after the credit sequence, it just jumped into this other storyline that felt like it didn't really add anything to our understanding of them.
No. And we've seen glimpses of Wolverine's past in especially the second X-Men movie. And that stuff, I think, as you and I were talking about before, was exciting and intriguing because it's incomplete, I think, partly. And you can fill in the gaps yourself and you can imagine something really cool going on. But what they give you in this movie is really disappointing.
It's really
boring,
really
and pedestrian.
Boring.
Yeah.
And maybe it is the nature of the flashbacks in X-Men 2, but it felt like sort of like more ominous, evil, subversive. There was, I'm sure it had to do with a lot of the ways that it was edited and whatnot. But there was something to it where you feared finding out. Whereas here, it was treated very like pedestrian. It just, he gives his, monologue. Stryker gives his monologue about what needs to happen. Wolverine agrees, and it goes from there. There's no – I guess there was no, like – there's that conflict of him not wanting to do it, but then he decides to do it. But still, there's nothing really interesting going on there.
No, there really wasn't. And they try to create – and also that first part when Stryker first recruits him, there's a whole team. The team that Wolverine gets and Sabretooth get recruited into – and to me, that was such a huge missed opportunity, because here are a bunch of new characters, or the opportunity for a bunch of new characters to throw in. Some of them are from the comics, although they're altered a lot, and some of them don't, at least they didn't seem to me to have any sort of analog in the comic, but they were also underdeveloped, and then half of them get killed off right away, and it was just like a complete missed opportunity, and there's no motivation to care about what happens to any of those characters.
No, and it was just, it was really... uninteresting in as far as like besides Ryan Reynolds, I think the rest of the team was pretty much just there to fill up the frame,
right?
And for to me is like I always think. I mean, it's pretty obvious. You know, these superhero films, especially Marvel Studios, they're products.
Sure, of course.
They don't want to place characters that might have their own film later down the line into Wolverine's origin story, because then if he gets killed off, there goes $100 million they can make.
Yeah,
so it seems like filler characters, like they needed characters there, but they were too scared to put in any character with any significant worth that they might be able to play up later on.
Right,
and that's what it felt. It felt like these really like generic brand X, you know, like superhero characters that I don't know. I didn't understand that.
Yeah. I mean, there were a couple, like you mentioned, Ryan Reynolds, who plays Deadpool, who Reynolds, at least, has been like campaigning for years, it seems like, to have a Deadpool movie. So it seems like they may be setting him up. And the other character is Gambit, who also is a very popular character in the comics and seems like he might be of value at some point
later on his
own movie, or as like if they make a fourth X-Men movie, he could be a part of it. But yeah, otherwise, they did seem really generic and just
there to get killed off.
Yeah, exactly. There to get killed off. Not that, you know, not to spoil it, but
oh, sorry.
Yeah, and no, it's some of them do and some of them don't.
Yeah.
And I think I could forgive more of this if the action were better also. I mean, like X-Men, the third X-Men movie, The Last Stand, which a lot of people really dislike, I thought was all right because at least it had some cool, exciting action sequences if it didn't have the
level
of...
Felt epic.
Yeah. And this one did not feel... It didn't feel epic. It didn't feel exciting or innovative or anything like that.
No, there wasn't any... there was no really amazing set piece that you take away from after the film and remember. I mean, there's some pretty ridiculous sequences that are in the trailer where he jumps off of a motorcycle onto a helicopter.
Right,
but, for the most part, no, there's nothing really memorable. And I think two or three buildings get blown up in the film, and it's Wolverine walking away from them in a really cool shot. I don't know. It felt very, sort of like played out to me by the third explosion.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the whole thing was just incredibly cheesy. The dialogue, too, is very – not that the other X-Men movies are Shakespeare or anything, but I think there's a better – natural cadence maybe or something to the dialogue.
Well, what's weird is David Benioff, who 25th Hour. I think he wrote the book and did the screenplay.
Yeah, I think you're right. He has done some good stuff.
And so when I saw his I had no idea he was involved. I really haven't been following the production of this other than the director, but when I saw that, I was like, okay, this might get interesting.
Yeah.
But no, it was just, I don't know. He got a credit for it. I don't know how much of it was his and how much of it wasn't. But
Right. That's the thing. I mean, who knows how many writers really worked on this, and there were reshoots, and you got to take all that with a grain of salt, I think. But you're right. I mean, some talented people involved here, and certainly Hugh Jackman has been very appealing as Wolverine in the past, and I thought I just was kind of underwhelmed by the whole, like,
he got to take aspect. Well, he got to take his shirt off a lot.
He did, and know. So I mean, certain people, I'm sure, will enjoy that if that's what they're looking for.
And ladies,
for,
I think he shows his buns a few times too.
Oh right, there's that one sequence where he's running like running naked, which was kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, because there was an interview that I either read or heard recently where he loved the film because he was able to dive into the character a bit more. Like he felt like he could really, like, other than just being this character that chomps on a cigar and says bub every once in a while, but that's exactly what he is in this movie.
It's incredibly superficial.
Yeah. So maybe he saw it one way, but what ended up, you know, coming into theaters is not that at all.
There's
no inch of – you don't get below the surface at all with this film.
No, you certainly don't. And I hope it doesn't kill the X-Men franchise, because I think there's still a lot of potential in a lot of these characters. And that's one of the things about the X-Men is that there's such a wide range of characters that you could use. And I know they're working on some sort of like early days of the X-Men movie next,
first class,
right, which they semi-set up here with the young Cyclops. And Patrick Stewart makes a cameo as Professor X.
Spoiler.
Just kidding.
It's okay.
And that could be okay, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that I think Marvel is doing great is really pairing, like, at least on the filmmaker side, the director side, you know, someone like Gavin Hood, who, you know, comes from the background of like independent film. He made Tsotsi.
Right, which I thought was a terrible movie, but
I liked it.
It was independent.
that's another podcast.
Yeah.
You know, it was a really brave choice to hire somebody like him.
Right.
You know, and even look at the Iron Man series, you know.
Oh, yeah, sure. They've done a lot of good, But I mean, it's not like Gavin Hood brings anything exciting or distinctive to this movie, and whether that's his fault or the producer's fault is hard to say. But if you hire a distinctive, talented director, it's not really worth a lot if you don't give him the freedom to bring something. I mean, this movie had no personality. It could have been directed by anybody.
Yeah, no, no, exactly. I mean, there's certain elements that felt very gritty. It felt like his previous work, but all in all, you come down to it, it's, you know, it's a comic book, you know, superhero summer film.
Right, but not a good one.
No,
not a good one.
Not at all.
I would give this like 2 out of 5 stars, I think.
I'd give it 1 claw.
One, ouch. Okay, was that one out of, he only has, or does he have, he has 6 claws, I
one
guess.
1 claw out of 6 claws. Ouch. And that's the middle claw.
Yeah. okay, let's move on to a very different kind of movie. Sugar, which is opening exclusively over at Village Square. This is definitely an independent drama. It was at Sundance, where I know you saw it.
Yeah, 2008.
From Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, who made Half Nelson, which was only, I think, Fleck was only the credited director on that, and she was credited as a producer, but I assume it's a Coen Brothers type.
It is. Totally.
They're husband and wife, I think.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is the story of a baseball player from the Dominican Republic who is recruited to play on a fictional U.S. team, and he goes through the minor leagues. He ends up in sort of the middle of nowhere in Iowa, and it's a sports movie, I guess, but it's not really about sports. I mean, you see some baseball playing, but it certainly doesn't follow the formula of the sports movie with the underdog or climaxing with the big game or anything like that. It's more about this different kind of immigrant experience, which I thought was interesting because on the one hand, there's a lot of stuff that's recognizable here from, I think, a lot of immigrant narratives, especially in the last, like, I don't know, 25 minutes or so of the movie where he ends up in New York City. But at the same time, it's also a kind of immigrant experience that you don't see, which is, it's not like the, I mean, it's a mix, I think, between the like hard scrabble, like coming from a poor background, trying to make it in America, and a more middle class sort of existence where he's part of the great American pastime.
Yeah. And you know, for me, what made it interesting and what, you know, I like the film is the story of how they bring on these baseball players from other countries, and they have training camps and stuff. That whole culture, I mean, I don't follow sports at all.
No, and neither do I.
And so, but it would still remain interesting. I think that's what's, for me, what's kind of awesome about this film is that you can you know, like, follow the character side, or you can follow the sports side, or you can follow both, depending on who you are. But it's not prerequisite to be a baseball fan.
No, not at all.
Because this is very much about the smaller stories of these guys, of these immigrants that they bring out to play here in the States.
Right.
But yeah, I thought that was a cool concept of it. I was never aware of that, how that happened or what that process was like.
Right. I like that too. I think it's definitely a very different approach both to an immigrant story and to a sports story. And it shows, I mean, there's a definite, I like the balance here where you come into it, you maybe expect like, oh, he's going to middle America and it's going to be full of these sort of clueless, insensitive Americans. And there's a big mix of like, people are really nice to him, but they don't necessarily always know how to be nice to him. And there's some of that wacky fish out of water stuff, but it's toned down enough that I felt like it was very believable as this sort of like up and down experience. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes things go really well and he's really connects with people, and then sometimes he just feels like he's completely lost and he has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, and I don't know if the actors are actors or people that they just found, but it was really genuine. Like I think that was the other part of it too, is the, you know, to me they weren't acting. It was almost like sort of a documentary too. And when these guys would talk and joke around, you truly felt that they, you know, we're real friends, and that, you know, this camera was just in the room with them.
Yeah.
There was that element to it too. And the main actor, I thought, without him, without his level of, I don't know, just being genuine, I don't think the movie, for me, would have been as good.
Yeah. I think he's actually a non-professional. I don't know if he's a baseball player that they found or just someone, but I don't think he's a professional actor. But I agree that the acting from him was really good. And it has to be, because one of the things that is semi-frustrating about this movie is that the supporting characters kind of drift in and out of the movie, and there's never a strong one-on-one relationship for him with anyone to grab onto. He kind of goes from place to place. And the nature of the baseball industry is that these players are constantly shuffled from one location to another and one team from another, which is realistic, I'm sure. But at times I was wishing, like, I'd like to know a little more about some of his baseball player friends or his girlfriend back home who kind of just disappears like halfway through the movie. I mean, that's part of the story, but at the same time, I found that slightly frustrating. But I mean, overall, I thought this was a very good movie, and those are minor complaints.
I liked it too. You know, for me, the only misstep is the third act.
Right.
He goes to New York. You know, I don't know if I needed that much closure.
Yeah.
You know, if you consider that closure. But for me, it felt kind of tied up well. And I don't know if I needed that. I think I could have just got him, you know, stepping out of a cab into New York, and that would have been it. Because that's, you know, another story.
Right.
We were sort of following him from stepping off of the plane the first time to actually landing somewhere else after he's kind of gone through, you know, trying to be a baseball player and whatnot. So.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can understand what you're saying there. I mean, I liked that third act. And I liked, strangely enough, and not to give away anything, but I liked that a lot of things really turned out well for the guy. I mean, I think we're so used to, especially in independent films, a story like this where everything is miserable and things are going to go badly and then they're just going to get worse and he's going to be hopeless. And it's not that everything is tied up with a bow and, you know, his life is perfect at the end or anything, but he manages to find his own way in the U.S. and find this balance between the dream of playing baseball and just how he wants to live his life. And I liked that. I mean, this movie is much more optimistic, I think, than their last movie, which was pretty bleak at times. So that's – I think that's something that I'm less accustomed to seeing in independent movies. I mean, obviously, in a Hollywood movie, you expect – I mean, in a Hollywood movie, he'd win the World Series by the end.
Yeah, with a monkey pitcher.
Yeah. Oh, with Matt LeBlanc. And obviously that doesn't happen here, but I like that. But I understand what you're saying, that it does almost feel like a separate story there when he gets to New York.
Yeah, but I do like what you're saying about it being being a very optimistic film, because maybe it's not at the level of what, at least for me as an audience member, was wanting for him.
Right.
But to see him attain some level of happiness, positivity was enough for me.
Yeah.
You know, yes, he didn't go and win the World Series, but he's happy in the end, I guess.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it seems that way. And so I liked that about this movie. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely would recommend it. I think it's worth the trek over to Village Square if it's a ways for you. I give it probably like 3.5 stars out of 5, which is a solid positive recommendation from me.
I'll probably just up it a notch to 4.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I mean, definitely 5. Check it out. And especially instead of Wolverine, go see something with a little more substance. And I think this movie is probably more exciting than Wolverine.
Yeah, and you know, for me, it comes back to, like, I saw this film, like, almost 1.5 years ago. And the fact it's just making it over here to Vegas, it's like, you know, people really need to start, you know, going out and supporting these films so we can get these films, you know, get a lot of these really great quality films. And if you look at this film in particular, it's not made to do blockbuster, you know, like money. There's no really, really big actors.
Right.
It might be somewhat of a you know, hard story to get into, but all in all, it's well done. They had, you know, the director and the writer, they had very good intentions.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I think just, you know, go out and support it.
Yeah, and I think it's not, like, unlike a lot of artsy independent movies, I think it's a pretty accessible film. I mean, with the baseball element, and it's a familiar story, and I think it's an easy character to like and root for. So, I mean, I think it could appeal, not blockbuster per se, but I think it could appeal to a wide audience. Yeah. So definitely check that out.
Check it out.
And another thing to check out coming up on DVD on Tuesday is The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which was one of the most highly acclaimed films of last year, nominated for a lot of Oscars.
I don't know why. But
okay. See, and this was one of my favorite films of 2008, and I know a lot of people don't like this movie.
Yeah,
but I love it, and
you know, here's the thing: I'm a huge Fincher fan.
Right,
okay? Like huge. Like ever since Alien 3, even though people don't like that film,
I like Alien 3 also.
Yeah,
like, I'm a big David Fincher fan as well.
Huge David Fincher fan, but to me, his dedication to perfection just somehow got in the way of telling this story in a much more human way. It felt very cold to me. It felt very technical, I guess, is the term I'm trying to get at. Beautiful to look at.
Right.
You know, wonderfully acted, you know, great special effects. But as much time as you spend with the character, which I think is like 2.5, almost 3 hours
close
long.
Yeah, 3 hours, yeah.
I still felt this coldness. There wasn't a warmth to him, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a common criticism of this movie. And I mean, I agree to the extent that Fincher is typically a very cold technical filmmaker, and in the past his subject matter, I think, has matched that style better. I mean, something like Zodiac, I think, is the pinnacle of, like, the technical.
Amazing.
And I love Zodiac, and Zodiac is certainly a better film than this.
Yep.
But I was surprised with the amount of emotional connection I had with this movie. I mean, I will say, like, I teared up at this film. And a movie that's coldly technical and removed, I think, would not elicit that response. Now, obviously, I mean, if you didn't have that emotional response,
well,
then you can't.
I think Kate Blanchett had a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
For me, it was her character that I was actually drawn towards and kind of affected by her plight.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Benjamin Button, it's like he's just going through the motions, you know? That's what it felt like to me. But every time we kind of dip back into Kate's character's life, she was at a different point in which you could, you know, really like kind of want to understand her more.
Right.
But Benjamin, I don't know.
He is a little I took it a little like he's living his life that way because he has to be, you know, the plot is that he's aging backwards. He starts as an old man and ends up as a baby. And because of his unique nature, he kind of has to be at a remove from all the people that he meets. Form a tie. So I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm making a bit of a leap in order to give the movie credit, but I agree with you that he seems as a character a little withdrawn.
Yeah.
But I felt like that fit the character, and I liked Brad Pitt's performance. I liked Kate Blanchett as well, and I think she helps bring that, you know, emotional element to the film. But, I mean, I did connect with it as a story. Obviously, it's an amazing technical achievement. I think it's worth seeing just for what they do with the effects.
I think so, too. And, you know, it's, for me, him aging backwards, how did it really impact, I mean, his character? It's awkward, you know, he's awkward. A lot of awkward people in the world. You don't need to have him age backwards to do that.
Right.
There was a missed opportunity in having something like this, just really interesting, because they obviously had the resources. They had the writer to do it. And it never really did anything different than your typical, I don't know, like love story type film. There was no, you know, maybe towards the end when, spoiler alert, spoiler alert, he dies as a baby.
Right.
That's interesting.
Right.
You don't see that.
No,
but
you
everything
don't.
In
that's true.
But everything in between, there was no.
I mean, I think
what did it add?
It served to sort of, again, set him apart from average people.
Give him a horn on his head.
Yeah, I mean,
you know?
Well, it could have been something like
yeah,
that too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think you're right that the aging aspect of it is maybe underplayed, but I think making him other from everyone else is part of, I think, why the story can seem detached, or why the character can seem detached, and what they're trying to say with the story. I mean, I don't think this is a perfect movie. I think the framing sequence also with Kate Blanchett as an older version of her character in the hospital and dying, and there's a revelation there that is incredibly obvious that you can see from the moment the movie begins.
Yep.
That was probably unnecessary and could have trimmed the movie back.
Yeah.
But otherwise, the story of Benjamin Button, and especially the love story aspect, I thought was really affecting. And
I thought so too. I mean, there are parts of it that definitely work for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, after I saw the film, I was knocked back for you know, a good couple of days. But once I started thinking about why,
right,
maybe it was the length of the film, but I truly felt that David Fincher did show us a person's life. Like, I never felt like I've ever seen a film where I'm seeing someone born, you know, live his life and then die. Like, it felt like a very complete life. And it felt like there were parts of it that affected me.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when I was stepping back and just looking at the whole thing, it just didn't match up with the original impact it had when the credits came up, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I mean, I still think it's definitely a movie worth renting. I still think it's a great film. Even if you don't think it's a great film, I think it's something that's worth seeing.
I mean, I'm still buying the Criterion Blu-ray, if that says anything to you.
There you go.
I have to have all the Fincher films, especially in Blu-ray.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say it's Fincher's best film, and I hope that he does something a little more attuned to his sensibilities maybe in the future. But for what it is, I think it's a really impressive accomplishment.
Is the Criterion one that's the one coming out?
Oh, you know what?
Week?
I don't know. It's the first release, so it might not be.
Okay.
But I should have looked at that and I did.
No, because I saw it on the Criterion site, but it was like towards the bottom of the list. So I think the Blu-ray Criterion, sorry to give everyone hopes up, is probably not coming for another few months. But I think the Criterion, the regular DVD.
The regular DVD is out. Yeah, I mean, this might be something then if you're a fan of it or if you're a movie geek, you might want to wait for the special extra whatever edition. But if you just want to rent it because you didn't see it, I think, you know, check it out. Check it out on Tuesday. And check out Sugar over at Village Square. Definitely worth the trip. So my thanks to Roger Eric Tinch for joining me.
Thanks, Josh. Thank you, internet people.
Yes. For Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.